Okay, so welcome everyone to, what is it, where are we? Second session of lesson two, right? Yes. Who was not here this morning? Yes, a few. All right. Well, I guess you will see in the role plays what we discussed this morning. But just to quickly summarize, we discussed how envy manifests towards seniors equals in juniors. And we were discussing one nice verse and purport from the Bhagavatam, 4th canto, verse number 8, chapter number 8, verse 34. Do you have all the materials? No? No, we are still in lesson 2. Who doesn't have the materials for lesson 2? Okay, wow, there's quite a few people. Do we have any materials for lesson 2? Oh, and she's not here. But she was just here a minute ago, wasn't she? Oh, there is? Okay, wow, you found it amazing. So, yeah, please. And this water is a little cold. Can I have some warm water? Yeah, so everybody should have the materials, at least for the session which we are discussing now, concluding now. Lesson 2. Right? The lesson 3 we will distribute after that. Yes. This Prabhu who just went to get water for me, he also doesn't have any materials. Yes. So anybody else of the ladies doesn't have lesson 2? Okay. Yeah, so there's a couple more ladies there. Purudhi. Okay, good. Okay, so are we organized? Okay, so everybody has lesson 2 in front of them, huh? Okay, good. So that means you were not there when was it? Saturday evening also not?
No, I was on the Friday.
Okay, good. Yeah, well, I mean, fair enough, not everybody can come every day. Okay, so can we settle down now? Okay. Yes? Good. Thank you. Thank you for helping with this and discovering the papers there in the back. Okay. So I would say we just start with the role plays because we made 3 groups. One group to show us the envious behavior towards seniors, envious and then non-envious, and then one group showing us the envious and then non-envious behavior towards juniors, and then envious and non-envious behavior towards equals. So who was group number 1? Okay, so here is your stage, and I will move to the audience so I can see this also.
Yes, maybe you need to.
Maybe, yes.
Thank you.
So, I'll just introduce. So, we are starting with the negative one. And now we are attending Bhagavatam class from some Maharaj. We are discussing his class.
This Maharaj that's having the lesson, he is so amazing. I mean, I heard the words, "You are not this body," so many times before, but the way he says it, it's so interesting. I mean, I'm realizing so many new things.
Oh, okay. He's actually okay, but you know, it's a bit slow for my taste. I'm losing my concentration while listening to him. Don't you think?
I think he is very versed in the Vedas. I think he knows a lot of quotes by heart. I think he knows a lot of purports from Prabhupada. I think he knows very, very much.
Yes, actually, but it's not all about the quotes. There is nothing practical, actually, in there. It's not my taste, actually. And you know, recently he visited Simhachalam, and I heard he didn't attend Mangalarati. Can you imagine? But, you know, it's okay. He is okay. But, you know, never mind. Just forget.
Oh, I see Keshava Prabhu is there. He has come from afar now. You know him, right?
Yes, sure. He's here. Oh my God, it's amazing. He's here. Keshava Prabhu, you know, I hear about his classes. I hear a lot also. I saw him so many times. He's so amazing preacher. And actually, even though he is not Srila Prabhupada's disciples, I hear every time from his class, he loves Srila Prabhupada so much. His classes are so full of love and care. It's just amazing. What do you say?
I completely agree with you. Yes, and I hope we can from him hear lessons again today or tomorrow that he will explain very thoroughly. And I can't wait to hear more about him. Yes.
Yes, me too. I'm very, very eager to require from that kind of person. And actually, every time he moves my heart, even though I hear these points so many times, but every time it's like a refreshing, and, you know, he moves me forward and helping me to increase my love for Krishna. So let's just greet him. Yes. Keshava Prabhu, Hare Krishna, welcome, please. Would you like to sit? Do you need something? Would you like to have a glass of water? Or we are very happy to have you, and we are very, very happy and very eager to hear from you tomorrow.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So now our next group. MB Towards Juniors. Who was that? I can't even remember. Yes, okay, good. You want to take the mic also?
Make an introduction.
Yes. Hare Krishna, introduction. First, we did both things in one. So I will play the senior devotee. He will be younger, and I will. Take the last out from my heart, and I will transform because he's such a good devotee.
It's very difficult to role play the time playing. I don't know. To be, when we are rehearsing, it's like this that I have to show how I'm inspired to be a devotee, how I would like to connect with Krishna in a real way, but since I'm a junior, I'm here for 1 year, I don't know how to do it, I'm a little bit clumsy, but my intentions are... Yeah, thank you. Okay. Mandragosh Prabhu, do you have time?
No, not now, I'm too busy.
But still, yeah, I was listening to your kirtan in the morning, it was so nice, I would like to also to learn how to play Mridanga, Karatali, I'm so inspired.
Yeah, you know how to play Karatals?
I mean, I can learn, I can. Give me a chance, or how I can learn from you. You're such
I'm not sure if you're talented.
Okay, yes, I know. I think I'm not talented, but still, I think I can learn to play. For when I'm looking at you, you're playing so nice, and you're so expert. I need your help. I think I need your help.
Have you read any Prabhupada's books?
Yes. I've read Bhagavad Gita a few times. Now I'm reading the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. They're big books, and I try to read them as fast as possible, but I'm not a good reader, really.
You chant 16 rounds?
Oh, by the mercy, yes, I can chant 16 rounds, and tomorrow is Ekadashi. I think you're so good at chanting. I would like to chant with you, maybe 64 rounds. Show me, because when I was looking at you, how you were chanting, you're so deep into the meditation, and really, I'm so inspired by you. I think I need you to be better devoted to me.
But what about the hair? What are you going to do with this?
Yes. I had a meditation. I don't want to be hippie anymore. I would like to get a shelter from the spiritual master. I will shave my head. Actually, you can help me. I mean, it will be for the first time that I am shaving my head. You know, the hair are pretty long. They were growing because I was uncivilized. I was cruel to my body, to everybody. Now I would like to serve Krishna because this is the only way to live.
I don't know what to say anymore. You're too good devotee. I'm not so good. You're such nice devotee. How can I help you? Come, you want to come to the temple? I'll help you everything. I'll teach you how to play karatas. You'll sing and dance. You come help me in kitchen. You know how to cut vegetables?
I will learn how to cut the vegetables for Lord. Of course, I mean, I'll try.
You're so nice.
I think you're nice. That's why. Yeah, you can. Yeah, we had a good time. I mean, it was. You should also try it, guys.
I'll try. Thank you very much. Very nice. Very nice. Okay. Sayonara. Number three. And Mom and his behavior towards eagles. All that was the ladies' group again. Also, it was good.
Can you pick out the microphone because lots of moving? Is it okay?
What? Without microphone? You sure we can hear?
Oh, we're quite loud.
No, I think they want to broadcast.
Yeah, they want to.
That's true. So you just.
It's going to be hard because we're moving.
Anyway, you try your best.
No.
Somebody is falling. Okay. Sorry.
Saki, do you think that this brown star will suit me? Definitely, yeah. You're just going to look so young and so beautiful. Yeah, perfect. Aww, you are such a good friend. You know, I cooked for Guru Maharaj last week, and he really liked it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What did you make? I made pumpkin soup, salad, and lasagna.
Okay.
No rice.
How come?
That he like her food. I'm the best cook. I have to think of something better to make.
Now this is the positive.
Saki, how
look at you. You are always dressed up very nicely. Can you also help me?
Yeah, of course. We'll get you a beautiful, bright sari, and I'll show you right now. Please, can you help me? I'm cooking for Guru Maharaj right now, and you're a really good cook. So maybe I could just be an assistant cook and learn from you in that way.
Well, I'm not so good, but we can cooperate, we can do together for the pleasure of our Guru Maharaj. Thank you.
Yes, I mean, in regards to cooking together for Guru Maharaj, I have seen all kinds of amazing battles there, you know. People stealing each other's boga, stealing each other's pots, trying to, you know, make sure the preparation of the other person will not be served. You know, oh no, she cooked that. No need to serve that. He will not like it. Like that, yes. Yeah, yeah, these things are going on, yeah. Yes. Or two equally qualified devotees dressing the deities for Janmashtami on the altar. Whole battle, you know. Who's got the better idea? And people go in and correct each other's ways of dressing and do it their way. And, oh my God, you know. Yes. Yeah, so for those who were not here this morning, we concluded the morning session that association amongst equals is the most purifying. Because there we have to really show true color, whether we want to somehow try and be superior after all, or whether we, you know, we are humble servants and we take the humble position like that. And in regards to correcting, I mean, I have to say all role plays were pretty mild, actually. One can even play them much more extreme, you know, that it comes out even more, you know. So, but in regards to correcting, we were saying this morning, one way how envy towards juniors can manifest is by constant harsh correction. And let us just be clear that actually in order to correct another devotee, we were saying this morning, actually the etiquette is one should be non-envious. But not only that, it actually has to be our service to correct. If it is not our service, it's none of our business really. You know, it's not that anybody can just walk around and correct anybody. No, no, we have to actually be appointed to correct somebody. If it is not our service, then, yeah, I mean, then it's not our service. Especially when young devotees or new people come to the temple, often everybody, ah, oh, finally, now we've got somebody who we can correct. You know, and then from all sides, this poor new person gets corrected here and there. And, ah, oh my God, you know, he's not doing anything right. No, no, it's usually one person, the bhakta leader or, you know, whoever is in charge of the new devotees. And that one person should take care of them. And not everybody just jumping at the poor person and correcting all the time, you know. It's very off-putting, you know. But in a subtle way, we enjoy this opportunity to correct others so we can establish our superiority. Yeah. Also, another thing is that our positive effect of correcting somebody very much depends on our relationship with that person. I remember I once asking my Guru Maharaj about this, how to see whether I can correct a person and to what extent I can correct. Meaning I was using the term how I can see whether I can pull out some weed there. Right? We know the weeds growing there along with the Bhakti Lata. So, and he gave me a very nice answer. He first was saying, it depends on the faith that person has in you. If that person has a lot of faith in you, then you can correct, then you can pull out some weeds. But if the relationship is not very strong, that person doesn't have much faith in you, you cannot correct. No, it will only damage the relationship actually. But that correction will not be accepted. It will not fall on fertile ground. So then better not to even do it really, because it will not be accepted anyway. And then he also said, don't pull out all weeds at once and just experiment on a little one and see how you go. You know? So don't go to the most, the biggest weed, the most deep-rooted weed, the most dangerous weed. Just experiment on a small one and see if that's accepted. And then maybe you can work yourself towards the bigger one. So we often forget to consider these things, that really our power of correcting somebody depends on how much faith that person has in us. And if a person doesn't accept our correction, even if it is right, well, then we have to tell ourselves, obviously, that person doesn't have enough faith in me. You know, our relationship is not strong enough. And not just blaming the other person, oh, he or she is not accepting my correction, even though it's right, and. No, it's a matter of relationship, really. Yeah, so I simply wanted to add these little things in regards to correction. So now, once again, why are we discussing this topic of envy in connection with giving and accepting shelter? Even though I mentioned it already, but let me ask you just to see. Do you mind moving a little closer? You're just so far away there. Just move closer. Then I can connect better there and see you all nicely, you know. Then don't be afraid, I don't bite, you know. It's just yeah, this is better. Good. So why again are we discussing this topic now with envy? How is that connected with giving shelter, accepting shelter? What's the connection again? Who remembers?
This is often the reason we don't want to take or give
shelter. Exactly. Yes, this is the main and foremost blockage. Why we don't want to give shelter, why we don't want to take shelter. Very clear. You know, if our heart is full of envy, for those who were not here this morning, we were saying envious behavior towards seniors, we ignore him, we minimize him, like we saw, the lecture's alright, but, you know, we minimize the person, we find fault, or we completely ignore the person. You know, so obviously if we have that attitude towards seniors, How can we be eager to inquire and serve and take shelter? Not possible. We're too envious. I was. Yeah, we're too envious. How can we take shelter? And in the same way, you know, envy towards juniors, if we like to, you know, be oppressive and condescending and talk down on the person and constantly correct and instruct and, oh, I've got no time for you, and. So how can we have that mood of affectionately uplifting a person? Right? Yeah, this envy, this is what is mainly in our way. And as we were saying in the very beginning, material life and its culture means it's all around sense gratification. So as soon as sense gratification is the all-in-all, competition and envy follows. They're inseparable, sense gratification and envy. So, and, you know, modern Western lifestyle, even though, I mean, this is all entering India now too. India is becoming very materialistic these days. So, but that's what's going on. That's why for us here being surrounded by materialistic culture, it's not so natural to give shelter. It's not so natural to take shelter because our hearts are full of envy. You know? Right? Yes. Let me see. Yes. Let me see if there is any questions, because this morning we basically almost, we had zero time for asking questions. Yes.
Yeah, I have a question. The general topic on the envy. How to decrease our envy? You mentioned at the beginning of the day, we should first recognize it and somehow meditate and ask Krishna to remove.
Yes.
How does this, I mean, okay, recognize maybe once or because it's a week, will it go like immediately out or is it decreasing or what?
Well,
so
question is, how do we recognize, what do we do about the envy there? Well, I think it was the first Bhagavatam class when I was presenting these 5-6 steps, you know, that first of all we have to hear about the topic. This is why we have also this whole discussion and with role play, so we become mindful, we realize, oh yeah, this is what I'm doing. So first of all, the awareness has to be there. And then the desire to get rid of this envy has to be there, that we understand it's an ugly, nasty feeling which contaminates everything. Yesterday we talked about it in Ram Naomi, how this, you know, this envy of Kaikeyi's maidservant there brought about somehow big, you know, dramas there, you know, just from one person. My God, that's the power of envy, just poisoning and destroying everything. So the desire has to be there to get rid of it. And then step number 3 is introspection in honesty, that we look within our hearts, you know. We analyze, we introspective. Why do I say this? Why do I do this? You know, and. So introspection has to be there. Without introspection, we can always cheat ourselves, you know, and the contaminated intelligence will always find the right reasons why we are actually right and we're doing everything properly and the others are all wrong and. Yeah, so introspection and honesty has to be there. And then we catch ourselves doing the wrong thing if we are introspective, then sooner or later we see, ah, gee, again I said, you know, something and I put others down in a subtle way and I made fun out of them on their expense or, you know, I was harshly criticizing. I mean, these things are so subtle that often we don't even realize, we don't notice. So, yes, and then when we catch ourselves doing the wrong thing, then we will lament, we cry out to Krishna, oh, please, Krishna, you please come and remove this envy from my heart. And if we do this internal work of introspection, catching ourselves doing the wrong thing, crying out to Krishna and lamenting and inviting him to free us from this envy, then sooner or later we will. It's a gradual thing, it's not from one day to the other, you know. We've been carrying this envious attitude for so many lifetimes with us. So it takes quite some internal work there to really uproot these things, you know. And I mean, also Vaishnava etiquette and culture is there in order to give us this framework. You know, there's so many Vaishnava etiquette rules that we, you know, how we are meant to act towards a senior, even if we don't feel like it. I mean, if we would all be Trinada Pisuni Trina, then there would be no need for Vaishnava etiquette. Then we would do it all automatically. But because we are not there yet, that's why we need the Vaishnava etiquette and culture, which helps us to move in that direction. Right? That we're meant to, you know, receive a person nicely and offer obeisances and offer glass water and, you know, and so on, you know. So these are all rules of etiquette there just to get us out of this envious pattern of behavior. That's why the culture is so important. It's not just some external thing or something. You know. Any other question? Yes, Maharishi.
So we are now discussing how to deal when we become aware of our own envy towards someone else. But what in situations when we are on the receiving? Practical. If there is perhaps situation of a senior being envious for a junior, what can a junior do to uplift that situation, to decrease the envy?
If a senior person is envious towards the junior, what the junior can do? Well, I mean, see, the Vaishnav mood is always, I mean, we definitely have to really guard against, you know, fault finding or something. You know, that then very easily we commit some Vaishnav aparad when we say, oh, that person is envious towards me and. So we really have to keep away from that. So Vaishnav mood is always to think, well, there must be some reason why Krishna puts me in this situation. So what am I doing, you know, to receive such a reaction from this person? And what is Krishna trying to teach me? And the Vaishnava mood is always to think, well, actually I'm deserving so much more than this, but Krishna is so kind, I'm only getting one drop of what I really deserve. So tolerance is always most victorious, you know. But then if it gets, you know, too oppressive and too difficult for us, well, that's why we should have a counselor. You know, we should have one, at least one relationship, you know, where we can really open up and reveal our mind, because maybe we are just imagining it all, right? Because from a junior level, we might be thinking that this is all envy from the senior, but we are projecting our own envy. So not so easy from a junior perspective to objectively see what's going on here, right? Yeah, so that's why we have to be very careful in passing some judgments about seniors, because we might just, you know, completely misjudge the whole situation. We might be so affected by our false ego and pride and arrogance that we don't realize that actually this chastisement we are getting, well, this is what we need to, you know, somehow understand, you know, that we are behaving wrongly towards that senior person or something. So, yeah, I mean, better to reveal our mind to somebody, to our counselor, to our mentor, that would be the best. And then let that person help us to see, you know, that person is neutral and can more clearly see what's going on here in the situation, and, you know. Yes. Anything else? Yes.
How obviously this end is, everybody, as you said, everybody has to work with himself to uproot this.
Yes.
So my question is, can we, as we live in a temple, can we do something as a group? Because we discussed, let's say, if there are some rules that we can help young devotees. So I can give an example. Let's say that... if there are some rules, let's say, then young devotees will probably not criticize some situation.
What kind of rules do you mean?
Let's say that we have house rules, or we don't have a house rule, and let's say somebody doesn't come to the program. And if you are, you know, there we are young devotees, and you say, "Oh, they are living in the temple, and they are not coming to the program or something, or prasadam." Let's say they are taking not regarding the one who's serving prasadam or something. And as a young devotee, you say, "Oh, wow, why is this going on?"
Because I mean, that's one rule of etiquette, that as a young devotee, we are not meant to pass judgments on seniors and look at them and this and that. So this is basic Vaishnava etiquette. You know, it's not, that's why I'm saying to correct others has to be our service. We have to be appointed and to pass judgments. This is a very dangerous thing, you know, to pass judgments on seniors. Even when there is some misunderstanding, some conflict, some dispute there on senior levels, a young devotee should never get involved. We should never take sides. It's beyond our level. How often do we do this, you know? We always discuss and, he said this and he said that, and what do you think is right or wrong, and you know, it's none of our business. Because from a junior position, we cannot see what's going on there on the senior level. We cannot see. We cannot judge. I mean, people often pass judgments on gurus and GBCs and this and that. I mean, this bull, you know, this is really dangerous. Very easily, we commit heavy apparat, you know. Yes, it's not our business. You know, so never mind if the seniors don't do this and don't do that. Oh, well, maybe they have a good reason, you know, maybe... They took rest at 12 o'clock or something. You know, it's not our business to worry about it. So no need for house rules. Just let's follow the Vaishnava etiquette. The Vaishnava etiquette should be the house rules. Yeah, I mean, we often lack badly in these more subtle and finer aspects of Vaishnava etiquette. Yes. Any last question? Yes.
What is the role of compassion? How to be there with compassion in this relationship? Because sometimes you're really stuck in with etiquette and being senior, being junior, you know, these things. So how to really rise above and also put this really pure intention, as you mentioned, just to remove all the obstacles between the person and Krishna. So to help, to be compassionate. So how to really rise above this? Things, because sometimes we really replace this, you know, this being junior, senior, instead of being Krishna consciousness. So where is the, you know, border? How to be careful with this while relating?
That we don't get too stuck on designations or something, or what?
Yes. And we stuck really with this because, you know, you really emphasize why we have this. We need to develop this attitude, Trinadapi, yes. But we are not there. So what's the Vaishnava mood? And, you know, but we are, whether we are really Vaishnava or we are just discussing what is the meaning to be Vaishnava, how to become Vaishnava.
So what happening meanwhile, how to really not stuck with these rules and being senior, but just develop this attitude, serving attitude, you know?
Well, I mean, ultimately it is a question of purification of the heart, you know?
Yes.
So I often serious practice, Shravanam, Kirtanam, you know, holy name retreat. There we hear all kinds of secrets of actual chanting, you know?
Because so. I can give one example, maybe you can help. So the other day, I really see there are very nice devotees here serving, but they see also some appropriate behavior. And then
what they see or you see?
No, someone see some inappropriate behavior, and that person become really red and really, I don't know, he was that person become a little bit angry when he saw that behavior, and then he shared with other devotees, and what they did, they start just criticize, and they didn't even ask why somebody did that. They just start to criticize. So what happened? They didn't help the person. They didn't solve any situation. They just criticized. So they just made offenses. So where is compassion in this situation when someone sees that kind of behavior improper? How we can develop this compassion?
See, true compassion develops through purification of the heart. But while we are not there, we have to follow the etiquettes. And as I was explaining already, unless it is our service to, you know, point out shortcomings in others, we shouldn't do it. We have enough to work within ourselves. There's enough stuff to, you know, correct and you know, find all kinds of faults and so on. So this tendency of always looking at others and correcting and talking and discussing and criticizing, this is just another form of envy, you know, and false ego, that we always point the finger at others and we see so many things in others there. So, and that's exactly why we need the etiquette, that this is not to be done. It ends up in Vaishnava Aparad. We should be very fearful of committing Vaishnava Aparad. This is one of the main reasons why we are not really getting much taste in chanting, because we are committing Vaishnava Aparad left and right every day. Always have something bad to say about somebody and, you know. So, but true compassion only develops if there's the necessary, you know, purification has happened in the heart. We can't artificially now just try to be compassionate or something. So that comes in due course of time as a result of purification. And while we are not there yet, we have to follow the etiquette. And we have to mind our own business and worry about ourselves. And I think we mentioned this already this morning. If we see something in somebody and we feel we don't have the right relationship to correct, then the proper etiquette is to go to his or her authority, to his or her mentor. Or if it's a real serious thing, to his or her spiritual master. You know? But it's not our business there to pass judgments and criticize and have some opinion about all different things and so on. Okay, wow, 8 o'clock, but I guess it is a serious topic. But I think we can still introduce one aspect of lesson 3. Can we quickly distribute lesson 3 to at least start with it? Yeah, somebody can help her there. Because lessons 3, now we are moving on to discuss. Let's just do this quietly, the distribution, and I'll still continue talking here. So lesson 3, we want to discuss the qualities required to be eager for shelter. And there we have 3 main qualities. And the first one I want to discuss tonight, and then tomorrow morning we have a look at the other two, and then tomorrow evening there will be no seminar session because we have a ladies' program tomorrow evening. But then Wednesday morning and Wednesday evening will be very important session. Please come as much as you can. That will be the qualifications we have to have in order to be able to give shelter. And that's really of great importance. So we know who is a qualified shelter giver, and we know what qualities we have to cultivate and aspire for so that we can one day reach out and be a shelter giver, you know. So it's a very important session. Okay, so Rupa Goswami tells us that the main and foremost qualification we need to have in order to get Krishna is intense greed for bhakti, intense greed to get Krishna, right? And if that intense longing is there, then actually everything else somehow follows from that. And we can say this intense greed for anything actually manifests in inquisitiveness. Right? If somebody is really keen on becoming an expert businessman or something, so he will constantly inquire, how do I develop my business? You know, he will look for books and he will be very inquisitive in that direction. Right? So in that way we can say this intense longing for Krishna, one way how it manifests is in this inquisitiveness. And also we can say, yes, some pens are there also. We can say the foremost qualification we have in order to be eager for shelter is actually humility. You know, summarizing it all, it's humility. We actually need some humility. And that humility also manifests in being inquisitive. Right? A proud person, he will think, oh, he knows already everything. No need for me to ask anybody about anything. And, you know, no need to hear from this person. I already know it all. So without humility, there's not that much inquisitiveness there. Right? So now inquisitiveness, we usually, when we hear inquisitiveness, we think that it mainly means to have a question, to inquire, because the word comes inquire. Inquisitiveness, obviously it comes from inquiry. But actually, we can understand one can have a question without being inquisitive. And one can be inquisitive without having a question. Right? Does it make sense to you? So actually, inquisitiveness is much more, it is much more subtle and deeper than just, oh, I've got a question, you know. Sometimes people ask questions just for the sake of having a question or something, you know. So, and sometimes people don't have a question, but they're really sitting there with a burning desire of, you know, finding out and sucking up every drop there like a dry sponge. So inquisitiveness is actually more an internal state of the heart, actually. And thinking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives some three levels of attentiveness in regards to chanting the holy name. And these three levels of attentiveness, they're not only there in chanting, they're actually there in any kind of service. also in hearing and any kind of service, basically whatever service we are doing should be done with attentiveness on the level of the body, on the level of the mind, on the level of the heart. Yes. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he calls this inattentiveness on the level of the body, he calls that laziness and sleepy, right? So, and inattentiveness on the level of the mind is distraction, right? When we are distracted. Inattentiveness on the level of the heart is indifference. When we are indifferent. You understand that word, indifference? You know, when we, we're not that interested, and all right, I can take it or leave it. And, you know, that's indifference. Yeah, it's just, so like hearing, you know, has to be done with attentiveness on the level of the body. If we sit there and fall asleep, oh well, that's not very good hearing. You know? And it has to be done with attentiveness on the level of the mind. If we just sit there and the mind goes all over the place, well then also the hearing will not be very effective. And it has to be done without indifference. With eagerness. And actually, that's what it means to be inquisitive, actually. You know, having that attentiveness on the level of the heart, without indifference. If we hear with indifference, it basically means the words go in one ear and out the other ear, and they bypass the heart. And therefore, it will not transform the heart. If the heart is not involved, it will not transform the heart. It's in any service like this. It's in chanting like that. We were talking about the service attitude, that we have to give our heart and soul in service, really giving our very best, wanting to please. Then the heart is involved. But if we serve, if we cook or clean the floor, dress the deities with this indifference, okay, I'm on the roster, okay, I'll just do it then, you know, with some minimal, effort. That's serving with indifference. Right? So hearing also, if we want that the hearing affects our heart, we have to kick out this indifference. Just sitting up our time there, okay, I live in the temple, I have to be at the Bhagavatam class. Okay, here we go, I'm sitting here and hopefully soon it's finished and we finally have prasadam and, you know, so this is indifference, right? There's this joke, you know, there's two mantras. One puts us asleep, it's Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And then the other one wakes us up, Mahaprasada Govinde, Namo Brahmani Vaishnavi, Sarya Vidada, then we're awake. You know, so this is indifference. So inquisitiveness is the direct opposite of indifference. Huh? Everybody understands. Yeah, so this is a good thing to understand. If no matter what service we do, if we want that it transforms the heart has to be involved. Otherwise it will bypass the heart and it will not have any effect on the heart. And we can do that service for many, many lifetimes with indifference and there will be nothing happening in the heart. Yeah, so, I mean, this process of bhakti is a pretty deep process. It's all about the heart, you know. Yeah, so this is, according to my humble understanding, this is what it means to be inquisitive. That there is this greed to hear. We really want to know. We want to find out. We want to suck up every drop that comes from a person's mouth in order to understand how to, you know, move forward. That's inquisitiveness. Even if there's not really immediately a question there or something. But I mean, if we hear with such intense eagerness and we try to work out how we apply, then usually there will be some questions. There will be. I remember some time ago I saw some article about this hearing by Satchinanda Swami on the Dandavat's website. And he was also making this point that just hearing for the sake of hearing, you know, this is pretty useless. It will not really develop any taste, but there has to be this intense eagerness there. And we have to digest it. We have to somehow think how we can apply this. And then it will, then it will do something, the hearing, and we actually get some taste, and there will be some transformation in our life. And interestingly, you know, we were saying Pari Prashnena Seva Yara, so Pari Prashna, the inquiry, very closely goes together with rendering service. They enhance each other. The more we render humble service, that will put us in the right frame of mind that we want to hear from that person. So the more we serve, the more eager we will be to hear. And the more eager we will be to hear, the more we will be eager to serve. Like that hearing, serving is enhancing each other. So that's why these two should go together. And I mean, we can make the practical experiment in our life when, you know, sannyasi comes or something. If we actually offer some service, then we are much more eager to hear. Because it puts us in the right frame of mind, in the humble mood towards that person. Very difficult to hear from a person if we don't have an humble attitude towards the person. Very difficult, almost impossible. Then the mind will always object, oh yeah, what's he saying now? And oh my God, and yeah, I know that. And oh, you know, then there will be always this whole, you know, internal ego conversation there going on. Yeah? So we have to have a humble mood towards the person, otherwise we cannot hear. And we will just be sitting there. You know? And that kind of hearing is pretty useless, you know. In fact, it can even be contaminating because then we commit offenses and, you know, and we judge the person and so then maybe better not to hear from the person, you know. And interesting, you know, when two people meet for some transcendental nectar to flow, one person has to be eager to inquire and hear, and one person has to be eager to share something uplifting. Only then some meaningful nectar is flowing. Huh? But if two people meet and none of them are eager to hear and inquire and none of them have anything uplifting to share, oh well, then you get the Hari Bol relationship, the small talk. And another interesting thing is, these days, people love to talk about themselves rather than inquiring. You know? Yeah, people are so full of themselves, what they all do and this and that and I. You know? So everybody likes to talk about themselves rather than inquiring from the other person, you know? Yes. And it also comes along with pride, you know? Yes. That's the whole thing, you know, material life and its culture. It's all about blowing up and feeding the ego. Oh, my God, you know, the selfies. Oh, look at me. I'm doing this. Posting it all on Facebook. Oh, it blows up the ego like anything. Yes, I try to stay away from all this, you know. I don't even have a mobile phone, you know. I'm not on Facebook and not for me. I'm not advanced enough to not get my ego affected there, you know, yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, I once heard that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not allow his disciples to put a picture of him in public. He said, this is not good for my ego. While I'm in this world, don't do that. Once I'm gone, then you can put it up. But while I'm in this world, don't put a picture of me in public. So of course, you know, he said this to instruct us. And I'm often thinking, what would he say about Facebook, you know? Where people just post pictures, oh, this is me, and the women all with hair open, and this and that, and oh my God, you know, it's poison for the false ego, really. Whole world sees me, you know. Yes. Yeah, so I mean, that's the thing, everybody's so much into themselves and they love to talk about themselves, and when they had a chance to talk, then, oh, it was a good program, and, you know, it's really sad how Kali Yuga is just affecting us, you know. And I remember I once had this little experience. I was invited for lunch once. And the devotees, yeah, they were around for maybe 15 years or something. So they were around for a while. And, yeah, somehow the situation was there was no inquiry coming from them. They were just talking about themselves, you know. But, I mean, not that I want to, you know, appear or proud or something, but it's not the way you associate with a senior devotee or a traveling preacher or something, invite them for lunch and then talk about yourself all the time. What for are you inviting the person then, you know? So anyway, there was not much inquiry coming, so I was trying to somehow stimulate the conversation, and I was inquiring because they were not inquiring, so I thought, all right, let me just ask something. Maybe they get the hint that, well, why don't you ask something now, you know, but no. So, but then, interestingly, she is putting out a magazine about her Gumaj, so, and then on the grounds of making an interview for that magazine, she asked some questions. She asked me if she could make an interview for this magazine. And I said, yeah, sure. So then we all of a sudden, you know, had this inquiry there. And of course, initially it was all formally just for the magazine. She was asking the questions. But then she actually got interested personally. And she started all asking this and asking that. And then the whole atmosphere changed. And it became actually a meaningful exchange. You know? Just because she wanted to make this interview. So, and then I thought afterwards, just see, you know, unless this inquiry is there, it's just not a meaningful and uplifting and satisfying exchange. But then as soon as she started inquiring, everybody benefits. That's what, you know, Prabhupada always says in the Bhagavatam. If there's some serious inquiry, the speaker also benefits. Because, you know, by speaking and sharing, you actually get the main benefit. I'm getting the main purification here by sharing these things. You know, so everybody is uplifted. The speaker and those who hear and. So that's the uplifting exchange. But if that's not there, if there's not at least one person inquiring and one person has something uplifting to share, then yeah, it's not satisfying. It's some small talk, you know? Yes. Yeah, so that's the thing. This inquisitiveness is one of the qualities we have to have in order to be eager for shelter. Right? Otherwise, you know, if there's no inquisitiveness there and we think we know it all, oh well, then why should we? We will not even want to ask for guidance or advice or insights or anything. So without inquisitiveness, There's no talk about taking shelter. Right? Makes sense? Yes. So, and I mean, interesting to understand these days, you know, to ask questions from a materialistic point of view is almost regarded as, you know, being foolish and stupid. What? You don't know? You're meant to know this. Right? So, nobody wants to appear that, oh, they don't know, they have to ask about this or something. No, everybody tries to project that they know everything already. So this inquisitiveness in material life and its culture, it's not really so, people don't aspire for it that much. It's almost looked down upon, you know, that we are loser, and we don't know, we are some fool, we are some idiot there, who, you know. And I mean, sometimes also, even amongst devotees, you know, when somebody asks a question, it's also another way how envy manifests, that we say, what? You don't know this? How long have you been around? You know, you don't know, you haven't heard about this before. You know, that we make, you know, fun out of the person, or we ridicule him and make him look stupid or something. But no, in spiritual life, you know, people inquire, or devotees inquire, even they know, they still inquire, just to hear it from a saintly person, and just for everybody else's benefit. You know, they still inquire. Right? Whole discussion, Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, Mahaprabhu was asking him all these questions. He didn't ask because he didn't know or something. He just asked to for the benefit of everybody else and for hearing, you know, the elaborations and so on, you know. Yes. So, and I mean, inquiring is actually how we serve also a senior devotee, you know, because we give him a chance to share something. And sadhu will not share anything if he is not asked. Because he knows, oh well, if people don't inquire, then no use to reveal. They're not ready to hear anything anyway. And there is, and yeah, we're going a little over time, the role plays. There is this nice little story when Prabhupada used to have these open darshans in the afternoons, where people used to just come in his room and spend time with Prabhupada. And once Prabhupada was saying, so, you have some question? And the devotee said, no, Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada got angry. He said, why are you coming here then? You know, if you don't have any question, then go, get out. He kicked them out. Just to make this point, how we associate with Guru, you know, not in the mood of entertainment, oh, let's see what he's going to say today, and hopefully it's going to be all funny and witty or something. But no, we are meant to inquire, have some inquisitive mood. And it can be cultivated. I remember, you know, in the more early days, I used to collect questions, and which I was asking then when I was seeing my Guru Maharaj, you know, throughout the year I was collecting questions, writing down, what can I ask him next time I see him? I want to have darshan and I want to ask him some meaningful things, something relevant, you know, because how often do we have the chance, you know, and our Guru might leave one day his body and then we will lament, oh, I never asked him this, I didn't take advantage of his presence in this world by asking some meaningful question. You know, so I was always writing down the questions, and then as soon as I had an opportunity, I made an appointment and I was asking with a whole list and squeezing some nectar there, you know. Yeah, so that's the way to associate, you know. Okay, so let's leave it at that. Let me see if anybody has some comment, some question about this first quality we have to have of being inquisitive. And I mean, even coming up with a good question is not even that easy. You know, sometimes people, well, let's see how inquisitive you are here. Do you have a good question? No, but it's not easy. Sometimes people ask rather irrelevant questions. Oh, I remember once, you know, one can also ask questions in a pretty inappropriate way, almost interrogating a person, you know. So, and what did you do then, and how was this, and about a person's personal life or something, and, you know, this is also inappropriate, you know. Then we take the superior position and just questioning the person here or something, you know. We have to know how to inquire, you know, and not some, like some police interrogation or something, you know. Yes.
I just want to share some experience from Mayapur recently. So one, my colleague from the Bhakti Shastri, she's a quite new in this process, and she's very inquisitive. She asks very, very good questions to all the teachers, and then she always stayed with a kind of doubt. She was never satisfied completely, and she really goes around and asking different kind of questions. Then she met one Prabhupada's disciples, and then she asked from her, and then she really moves her. She starts to cry. She said, "Now my journey starts. Now my journey really starts." And then after that, during ILS project, she met one Maharaj, and she recognized him as her spiritual master. And she said, "I said, now, how goes with your question? Did you ask him anything?" She said, "No question anymore. No question, but, you know, my journey really starts now. He answered my question, but journey just starts like, no question like that. The questions are inside now. And now it's serious."
Yes. Good. Yes. I mean, there is also one quick purport from the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada expresses the importance of being inquisitive. Let me see, where is it? Just quickly and then we will finish. This is 2.8.24. Prabhupada says, "The spiritual master is always prepared to impart knowledge to the disciple, and specifically when the disciple is very inquisitive. Inquisitiveness on the part of a disciple is greatly necessary for the progressive disciple. Maharaj Parikkhit is a typical disciple because he is perfectly inquisitive. If one is not very inquisitive about self-realization, one need not approach a spiritual master simply to make a show of discipleship." Wow, heavy. Yes. You know? So that there has to be some serious, you know, longing and inquisitiveness to really find out about deeper aspects of spiritual life. And if this is not there, then our discipleship is a mere show, you know. And I mean, yeah, it's going on a lot, you know. People, it's just so the fashion, okay, I accept this guru and I'm initiated and. But there's actually no real inquisitiveness there, you know. All going on. 8:30. I think we'll leave it at that. So tomorrow, if you have time, please come in the morning. There we will discuss two more qualities, helplessness and respect. These are the main qualities we have to be eager for shelter. And then Wednesday, session number 4. Okay? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Guru Permanently. And of course, if there's anybody who still didn't get a chance to get the book to find out all the deeper secrets of how to have good relationships with the other gender, then here is your chance.